There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Good afternoon and welcome. It is the last grill of the year, our last show of 2018. And as ever, we are live from our spiritual home here at Barasti. Do come down and find us. We're up the rooftop garden. It is the final Saturday before Christmas. So come on down and be part of the festivities. And as has become tradition over the last however many years it's been, that Barasti have very kindly hosted us down here each and every Saturday between the hours of 4 and 7 at this time of year, we'll be having a bit of an end of year's knees up. Expect panellists, past and present, special guests, regular contributors and some familiar voices weighing in over the next 3 hours, and a variety of sports, hot topics, as well as our review of the year in sport. Join the waves and strays of sport live here at Barasti between now and 7 o'clock, and then as we kick on a little after that. In person, or if you're not able to get that pink ticket and make your way down here, opinions are appreciated. You can text us now on 4001. You can have your say online at Dubai iSport and, of course, at Barasti Beach.
Let's go!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
So let's talk sport, and what have we got coming up for you? Early kickoff in the Premier League, early kickoff in La Liga, underway in Serie A as we speak, building up to Chelsea. And of course, United, our two feature games here on Dubai Eye 103.8 in just a little while. Live cricket in Bangladesh as we speak, big bash action for you a little later on. Gallagher Premiership returns as well, as does the Guinness Pro 14 and the Top 14. A quality night of boxing to look forward to round off 2018. There is action aplenty down at the BDC World Darts Championships. We'll have Chris McCarty bring us all the latest from that one. US sports rests for nobody. They'll be playing games aplenty over the next couple of weeks. And there is the small matter of a local side taking on one of the biggest sides, if not the biggest side in football, Alain, taking on Real Madrid FIFA Club World Cup 8:30 this evening. So plenty of sport to get through. Who's going to take us there? Well, let's mark a card with the two grill panellists and then introduce our very first very special guest into proceedings. Who is wading through all things sport in the first 60 minutes of this show before we're joined by others? Well, none other than our US sports correspondent. And am I right in saying that? You know, whilst a number of European leagues and teams take time off at this time of year, there is no rest for the wicked over in the US.
That's exactly right. All sports will be firing on all cylinders come December 25th and on Christmas Eve. So if you're a professional sports star and you're playing in the winter months in the United States, you've actually know you've made it if you're playing on Christmas, because that's when they schedule the good teams. That's when they schedule the big names to play. So you'll see LeBron and his Lakers most definitely in action come Christmas Day. Everyone gets nestled up by the fire, turns on the television after they eat that turkey or that ham, and they watch basketball for the rest of the day. I can't wait to get home. And of course, we also have hockey in full swing. We have some big things going on back home. There's a blockbuster trade with the Los Angeles Dodgers, who are sponsored by Emirates Airlines. They made a blockbuster trade with the Cincinnati Reds. We'll recap that. Like you said, Tom, there's some big boxing fights going on back home as well. And well, what else do we have? A little matter of NFL playoffs are coming right around the corner here. So busy time for U.S. sports. I can't wait to get on that flight Christmas Eve, get back home. December 27th, the Red Wings come to Pittsburgh, taking on the Pittsburgh Penguins. I'll be sitting a couple rows back, rooting them on the ice.
Also guiding us through all things sport, it is a welcome return to club rugby in terms of the leagues, that is, because we have a lot of Cup and Challenge Cup competition in the last couple of weeks. Welcome to you, Carlos van Rosenfeld.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Urquhart. And where's this year gone? 2018, as you say, it's all over and done. But as you say, still a lot of rugby happening on this Saturday. What I can tell you, in the Premiership, Exeter Chiefs will take on Saracens. That is the big one of the afternoon, should I rather say. Leicester Tigers will take on Harlequin. Sale Sharks will take on Bristol. And then while we live on air, we will bring you the top 14, Agen taking on Stade Francais. A little bit later, Toulon will take on Lyon. Grenoble will take on Montpellier. Racing Metro take on Perpignan. And Toulouse take on La Rochelle. Just a few scores from last night, from the Aviv. Northampton Saints beating Worcester Warriors. A massive score there, 32 points to 6, mainly thanks to the boot of Dan Bigger. Over on the other side, in Ireland, should I rather say, we had Ulster taking on Munster. A big, big victory there for Ulster, beating Munster 19 points to 12. And in Wales, Cardiff Blues beating the Newport Dragons 19 points to 16.
Listen, if you are at a loose end at the moment, I can't reiterate enough. Come on down here to Barasti. Great crowd out on the beach at the moment. Great crowd in and around the pool at the moment. Everyone filtering down for what promises to be a cracker of an evening of sport. Arsenal up first in the Premier League. Chelsea up second in the Premier League. And then to round things off, Man United under, I don't know if you've heard, new management a little later on. We'll get into that in more details. Got to say a huge thanks to Barasti for hosting us throughout 2018. As I mentioned at the top of the show, this is our final show of the year. The good news is, though, that we will be back in 2019. The I's have been dotted, the T's have been crossed. A lot of that has to go down to the thanks and the faith and the foresight of all the team at Barasti, and of course Minis Yahi and all the team down here at Western Hotels as well. One of them is alongside us here. He's very shy, doesn't like coming on to microphones, but we're gonna implore him to come and say hi, because we couldn't have done this show over the last, what is it, nine, eight years?
Too long
now, isn't it?
Yeah, far too long.
But you keep signing on the bottom. What's going on there,
I know, but look at Mourinho. We kept signing him as well, and it all comes to an end at some point.
Is it just paper, is it? Is it paper at the end of it? Is it?
Make it rain.
This is the voice, as you well know, regular listeners of The Grill, of Phil Hardy, who's basically the Don down here. He's the man that everyone calls round about 11 o'clock on a Thursday, Friday and Saturday. So come on, Phil, do you remember me? I'm your best mate,
There's one of them sat not that far away from me, if I'm being completely honest, with a beautiful little Santa hat on.
Your WhatsApp number, your phone number is gold dust out there on the streets of the UAE. Listen, opportunity for us to look back. Let's start with Barasti if we can. 2018, been a good year for you boys?
Yeah, it's been all right, to be fair. I think all around the city it's been a little bit hit or miss, but we've always been fairly consistent. The sport's been good. The screen's massive, so you can't really want too much else, to be fair, and the drinks are cold. So, yeah, we've been fairly fortunate. You know, the pool and beach has always been successful, and the nighttime parties are continuing to rock out. So
I had this chat over the weekend with a number of people. I was out in the desert last night with a few, and we were talking about Barasti and the legacy of Barasti, if you like. And I suppose from a management point of view, it's trying to get that balance, isn't it? That, you know, you've got your live music, that's what your fans coming down here for that. You've got your sport element, you've got your live gigs, you've got your beach, you've got everything else. And is that the sort of the core of the business, you do, trying to be something for everybody?
Yeah, absolutely. It's very easy to go off into one direction and neglect what people actually want. Dubai's ever changing, but everyone always wants to watch sport, everyone wants to get a suntan, and everyone wants to swim. And even post brunch, everyone wants to sing a song to 80s or 90s rubbish music. So, it's a matter of making sure that you can cater for everyone. Some venues go specifically for one demographic, one genre of music, perhaps. But I think if you can provide everything under one roof, so to speak, then you can't really go wrong. The size of the venue helps massively. Obviously, if you're much smaller, you can't do that. You end up clashing and no one ends up turning up. So we're fairly fortunate in the space we've got and what we can offer as well.
In terms of numbers at the moment, you've had a great year in terms of numbers over the last 12 months or so. Obviously, the roads are a bit quieter at the moment. A lot of people have headed off. Does that affect you, or are you still seeing good numbers this time of year?
We're still seeing good numbers for this time of year.
Yeah.
Everyone wanted it to be busier, but I mean, probably the only people doing really well here was Emirates. outside of that, I think, you know, mass exodus for Christmas, and then you get an incoming for New Year, whether it's tourists or whether it's the expats coming back. Some have just decided altogether to go away for Christmas and New Year and rock back on the 3rd of January. So we're still doing well. We're still fairly busy. Beach and pool is pumping, and people start rocking down for the Arsenal game, unfortunately.
Plenty of sport to look forward to between the period between now and, of course, the end of the year. In terms of what you've got planned for people down here for Christmas and New Year, some big gigs?
Yeah, fairly. It's situation normal, to be fair, up until New Year. We've made a step this year where on New Year's Eve, we normally close during the day and just open in the evening. This year, we've decided to open up during the day as well. So it's still going to be free entry. People still have access to the pool, still be able to watch some of the sport that's on New Year's Eve as well. And then we'll kick off for the evening on the beach and a middle deck as well. So, you know, Christmas Day, everyone's off for a brunch or a family affair and this, that and the other, and we'll see everyone at 5:30 when they finish with that and don't want to speak to the family anymore.
Obviously, I'll see you around about four.
Yeah. 12 not, o'clock, if we're honest.
That's 4 minutes past 12.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
In terms of the sport, let's talk about that. Obviously, this is our final show of the year. We're going to have a little bit of a look back at the year in sport. You show the biggest events down here, be it the World Cup. We had wicked time down here during the World Cup, as we have in a number of other games as well. And they keep coming, as we'll see tonight. Alain against Real Madrid, not to mention the Premier League, La Liga, Serie A. Everything's kicking off today. In terms for you, and I know you're passionate about your team back home in the UK, they don't get a huge amount of airtime on the big screen down here. Should have more.
They don't get airtime in the UK either. No one knows anything past Bristol. So,
but a good year in sport for you, both personally and Brasty-wise?
Personally, it was very, very mixed, if I'm honest. I'm a full-time United fan and was a part-time Plymouth fan until my close friends decided to transfer. So I had to move my allegiance from Plymouth up to Swindon, which is dropping a league, granted, but my allegiance was always with them playing rather than anything else. But Plymouth has had a very mixed season off the back end of last season and starting this season. They were pushing promotion or playoffs at least, and now you can find them probably propping up the bottom of the League One. Whereas now with Swindon are mid-table in League Two, it's substantial. But I think the biggest disappointment has to be, for a lot of Man United fans, to be fair, the absolute horror show that's taken place, and how a club can kind of drop as badly as it has in a few years. It's a little bit embarrassing. It's a little bit of a...
So with that in mind, and obviously under new management, we'll talk about that in detail here on the show over the next few hours, but with Ole Gunnar taking over the reins, do you think there's going to be sort of revived interest at that kickoff at 9:30, more eyeballs to see on the team he picks first up?
I would say so. I think it's a... I was watching something the other night, and I think it was after the last game. Every pundit has its opinion, but I think it's very simple, is that you can have the best players in the world, but if they don't gel as a team and they don't get on, or they don't have the respect, for instance, of the manager, then they're not going to do anything. Solskjaer coming in is a very peculiar choice in terms of his experience, but, I mean, he's a club legend, and they're going to have respect for him, and I think that's the important element that they will have at first. After that, they'll start and play for themselves. I can only see it going well. It can't get any worse, to be fair. Man United are supposed to be knocking Champions League football all the time. They've had a couple of lucky results in the Champions League this year, but they're nowhere near the top of the table, and I don't think they ever will do. But I think now is a matter of restoring a bit of pride, playing a bit of attractive football and playing how Man United should play. And if they creep up the table, I think that will be a plus at this point. But I think that if the players start playing for their £350,000 a week, whatever they're on at the moment, then that will be enough for fans to kind of get back on side.
Phil Hardy is the governor down here. We've heard Ole Gunnar Solskjaer talking about the governor all week. He's our governor down here at Barasti. He's everyone's favourite person throughout the entire weekend. Weeks things go a bit quiet, isn't it?
Sunday to Thursday, no one knows who I am. They just see a fat lad walking around the bar.
Mate.
Exactly. Weekends, bigger than anyone.
Listen, in terms of bookings for New Year, for, of course, this time over here, how do people do it? They get in touch on...
Yeah, online? I mean, for New Year, we've got our normal tickets you can buy online, Platinum List and 800 tickets. If you want to spruce everyone up and get the group together and have a couple of VIP tables, you can get them through Instagram or Facebook, or just calling us down at the venue. But it's a very, very simple New Year's Eve. The acts that we've got this year are acts that we've had in the past few years as well, and it's what kind of people want. A bit of simplicity. They want to know what they're going to get, and they don't want to pay through the nose for it. I think everyone's had a bumpy year, shall we say, and there's no point taking everyone to the cleaner, so to speak.
Hallelujah to that. Listen, got to say on behalf of all the team, to buy all the team at the Grill specifically, a big thanks to you and your team as well. You've been great hosts throughout 2018. Couple of pleas from the two panellists that are alongside us at the moment. I know Carlos van Rosenfeld will be asking that maybe in 2019 you show a bit more rugby, because there is the small matter of a Rugby World Cup. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it would be interesting to see what Barasti does do for the Rugby
Don't
World Cup.
Don't put him on the spot. He's just there.
Yeah. Oh, it's already planned. You don't have to worry about that. well ahead of the game.
So please tell us what we could expect, Mr. Hardy.
Well, we've got a great partnership coming up into September and October. The Rugby World Cup is it's a peculiar one. There's a lot of interest when it comes to it. If you look during a week on week, some of the club rugby doesn't get too much of a following out here. You get to something like the Six Nations, maybe the Heineken Cup, you'll get a little bit more interest. We're hoping that the Rugby World Cup, the setup that we'll have, we're still going to have the big screens. We're going to have a lot of activations. There's not going to be any dome or covering for that because there's no requirement. We're in, you know, peak year. It'll be great weather. But every game's going to be shown. And, you know, it's 30 days, 40 days of rugby. It can only be great for profit.
Phil, do you feel there'll be a lot more interest around the World Cup this year because of New Zealand losing twice this year? I get the impression that a lot of people think 2019 World Cup will be one of the most competitive.
I think so, and it'll be the same as what the Football World Cup was. I think there's a lot of expectation that it will always be the top three, top four. It'll always be South Africa, Australia or New Zealand. And the Northern Hemisphere has started to pick itself up a little bit. England's always having a sniff around, don't really follow through. Never really gets to the second, third date, but they're always there or thereabouts. But I think even within France has always been on the edge and pushing its agenda. But I think it'll be a lot more open than it's ever been over the past 20 plus years.
Watch this space. Phil Hardy says it here first on the show.
There as if I know what I'm
plans.
On about anyway.
Big plans for Rugby World Cup 2019. Brassy's going to be home for that one as well. So make your plans now. Start booking tables now. Why not? Get involved. A big thank you again from Miss. So that was from him. I'm assuming the plea from my dear colleague alongside me here, Ross Christ, is whatever
your
you
phone
do.
More. Yeah,
no, please don't change your number.
Yeah.
In 2019.
Well, we're lucky. It's a company number, so it's not going to change anytime soon. You can pick business cards up around the floor.
You're
the
right
toilet,
for New Year's. Do you need to say anything now, or are you good for a New Year? Right?
Keep doing the same thing, Phil. you do a bang up job here.
You're away this year, aren't you?
I'm a loyal customer, and if you ever build that dome again, let me be the first person to cut the ribbon because that was probably
fine.
The best thing ever that I've ever experienced inside Dubai. The World Cup dome here on the Barasti Beach. If you haven't done it and you're here 4 years from now, get in line, get here early, because it's one of the best things you can do here.
Phil Hardy, from us to you. Thank you, mate.
Pleasure, gentlemen. Have a good Christmas.
Well, we will. And I think we're going to stick around a little later on, if that's all right with you.
I've warned security already.
Thank you very much.
Don't worry about that.
That's the voice of Phil Hardy. He's the governor down here at Barasti. You're listening to The Grill. We're live from Barasti, where the game is always on.
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Right, let's just give you some team news ahead of the early kickoff in the Premier League, which is, 7 minutes away? It's on the big screen down here at Barasti, so get yourself down here. Arsenal taking on Burnley at the Emirates Stadium. Arsenal boss Unai Emery making no fewer than 6 changes to the side that played in the last Premier League game, that 3-2 defeat at Southampton. Mesut Ozil is back. He's back, though, not just on the pitch, but as captain. Of the team at the Emirates today, while Mohamed Elneny is making his first Premier League start of the season. In addition, there are recalls for Socrates, Alexandre Lacazette, Ainsley Maitland-Niles, and Shared Kolasinac. Arsenal, therefore, starting with Lina Maitland-Niles, Path Stathoulopoulos, Monreal, Kolasinac, Guendouzi, Elneny, Xhaka, Ozil, Lacazette and Aubameyang. As to you or their opponents today, Burnley, 2 changes for Burnley from the side that started that 1-0 defeat at Tottenham last Saturday. Forward Chris Wood and midfielder Jeff Hendrick are back for Aaron Lennon and Robbie Brady. So you've got Hart, Barnsley, Long, Tarkowski, Mee, Taylor, Westwood, Cork, Hendrick, Barnes and Wood making up that Burnley 11. So 2 teams going head-to-head in this early kickoff in the Premier League. We'll keep an eye on that game for you. Any goals, as and when they happen, we'll let you know about that. Well, Mesut Ozil, captain today. It's a bit over the top, isn't it?
Yeah, that's quite a big surprise, Tom, as you've just said, because at one stage I thought Mesut Ozil a little bit out the mix at Arsenal. He was quite outspoken. We also know, you know, what happened between him and the German Football Federation, and I kind of thought that he might not be part of the Arsenal long-term plans, but Unai Emery, totally different ideas, maybe feels by giving him a bit more responsibility will get the best out of him, so it'll be interesting to see how he does go as captain today. But going up against Burnley to me have been, besides Manchester United, of course, have really been the disappointment of the season. Sean Dyche really seems to be struggling to find some form with them this season. So it will be interesting to see what happens at the Emirates this afternoon.
Fascinating game this one as well, Ross, Chris, watching on, because given the fact that, you know, Arsenal with that impressive start to the season, no one knew what the campaign under Unai Emery would be like. They've got some great players in that squad. Would they gel together? He certainly seems to be getting the best until that shock defeat last week, and then it's all change.
Yeah, you saw that the derby against Tottenham. I saw that 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago in Sri Lanka. I went to a little sports bar down there, and they just look phenomenal. They're firing on all cylinders. Then they come out flat last week and get beat 2-0. So it's just, you don't really know what Arsenal team you're going to get yet. I still think they're still trying to find themselves at this point in the season. You kind of want to be already gelling, I guess, if you will, but... You know, sometimes they're hitting, sometimes they're not. I don't know what team we're going to see today, but certainly you hope for a result against Burnley.
Quick word about Lucas Torreira. He's had a great start to the season. Diminutive, for sure, but certainly a fan favourite. I've really enjoyed watching him throughout the season. What is he? He's no more than 5 foot or something like that. But he was a star for the World Cup during the summer for Uruguay. He's been a star at the Emirates as well, proving yet again that it's not turned into that game that you have to be 6'4" and going forward, etc. He just brings that different element to the Arsenal side.
Gutsy little fella, I'd say, Tom. And as you say, he's been very impressive. But I think, you know, not taking anything away from Arsenal this season, I think they've been very impressive. A lot of people did not know what to expect under Unai Emery. I forget now, I think it was 19 games unbeaten until they came undone against Southampton last week. And I think, you know, I don't quite think they were prepared for a Southampton onslaught as to what they've got. Of course, Southampton under the new manager, they just seemed to lift a lot of players. And I think they produced, obviously, their game of the season. But I think Arsenal supporters can be very, very happy to the start that they made. And to your point, mentioning a couple of players, they definitely seem to be getting their foundation that they will build off. And I reckon they'll come the end of the season, they'll definitely be challenging for a top four spot.
Burnley battered by Tottenham last weekend. Not so much on the scoreline, but certainly in class on the field. Tottenham flying Burnley. I mean, what a change of circumstance for them. This time last year, we were talking about the extraordinary job that Sean Dyche had done. Burnley won one of the surprise packages of the Premier League at the beginning of this year, 2018. You look at them at the end of the year, back into the relegation zone as well, with a number of question marks. I mean, at what point do the Burnley faithful and the Burnley board start looking at things and going and asking that question about Sean Dyche at the moment?
What's the moral of the story? Don't have Joe Hart in goal. But no, maybe I'm being a little
bit... It's been good recently.
No, in fairness, I feel that if we look at Burnley last season to this season, I feel that a lot of things haven't quite gone their way. Where last year, let's say they were getting the luck of the draw. This year, they haven't, Tom. I mean, that goal against Spurs last weekend, yeah, call it Spurs brilliant. Yeah, Spurs were pressurising a lot. But you know, I also kind of thought that game could have gone either way. But yeah, I don't think Burnley will get relegated this season. I think they will do enough to stay up. But as you say, Sean Dyche not quite getting the combination nations right this season. And I don't know, they just don't seem to be playing with that confidence which they have. And I think basically what's happened is, to your point earlier on, a couple of poor results and they just seem a little bit flat on themselves. So he would kind of have to regroup the guys now. As you say, they're slipping closer and closer into that relegation zone spot. So they have to be very, very careful. But I still think he's got enough power out there to avoid relegation this season.
You're listening to The Grill, broadcasting live from Barasti, where the game is always on. Plenty more voices coming your way between now and 7 o'clock. And an open invite to one and all. Come and join The Grill. Knees up, bit of a shindig straight after the show as we bring together sporting luminaries who have been guests of ours, who've been contributors of ours in years gone by, and of course over the last 12 months. If you've been an avid listener, then you've done your bit, you've earned your ticket in. Make sure that you join us between now and 7 o'clock, and of course straight after that you're listening to The Grill live from Brest, where the game is always on.
This is The Grill. Get involved with the show. Text 4001 or message us for free on the Dubai Eye Messenger app.
At 1 minute into Arsenal against Burnley, already two shots, one from each side, but still the goals remain out, or 0-0 is the score at the moment. No goals in Arsenal against Burnley. Chelsea against Leicester is your feature game here on Dubai Eye, 3.8 from 7 o'clock this evening. And then you've got Cardiff City entertaining Manchester United in a fascinating game a little later on in proceedings. So stay tuned for all of that. You're listening to Dubai Eye 103.8, and time for us to reflect on some of the big stories of the day. And they don't get much bigger than this.
Big, big breaking news. Manchester United have sacked Jose Mourinho. He was appointed in 2016 and he leaves the club after 144 games in charge. We need to get some reaction to this, and we're going to get Gary Neville on the phone right now, actually. Gary, good morning to you. Thanks very much for coming on so soon after this news has broken. What do you think about this news, especially the timing of it? Has that surprised you?
I'm not sure, really. I think the moment earlier on in the season where it was clear that the board decided that they didn't want to back a couple of Jose Mourinho signings, to be honest with you, at that point, you finished as a manager. I think that from a club point of view, obviously they gave him a new contract last January. In the summer, Jose obviously wanted to sign one or two centre-backs. Those one or two centre-backs were identified. And the club obviously have the ability and the right to say no to those signings if they don't feel it's right. But you have to understand the consequence that once you undermine a manager or don't agree with his signings and you're going against them, maybe for the right reasons from a club point of view, but if you're a manager, particularly of the sort of stature of Jose Mourinho, you're on a collision course. And what we've seen in the last 3 or 4 months is it play out in public. And I said on Sunday after the game against Liverpool that Manchester United have been crawling along on their hands and knees minute after minute, hour after hour, match to match for the last few weeks, months. And it's been unpleasant, it's been unsavoury. You could see on the pitch it's impacting the players who, to be honest with you, at this moment in time just look completely, I don't know what word you would describe, but they look demoralised. Some games they look disinterested, some games they look inspired for 20 minute periods, but so inconsistent. And the sacking of Jose Mourinho, to be honest with you, is a result of what happened last summer when Jose came back first day of pre-season tour and said basically he started sort of making complaints in the media. You knew that this was going to rumble on, and there had to be a sort of control grabbed at that time. It wasn't. It played out all the way through the transfer window, and a consequence of not backing your manager or going against your manager on one or two signings, it never ends well.
And that there, I mean, you said there how it's played out in public. Now, we know that Manchester United don't like any dirty laundry to be aired in public. But I think it's what you're saying there, it's some of this is the board's fault and some of it's the manager's fault.
Yeah, absolutely. It's never as simple. It's never as simple as just being the manager's problem. The players take responsibility, the board take responsibility, the manager and the coaching staff, obviously. You know, what I would say is now there have been 7 years of poor decisions, of poor recruitment. I have no idea who makes the decisions in the football club from a point of view of recruitment and structure. Who has the final say? So who is it that's telling Jose Mourinho that those players shouldn't be signed? You know, I can't see anybody in the football club that's got the qualification to do that. Now, if they think that basically they're not the right signings for the club, that's fine. But to me, the recruitment over the last few years has been erratic. The current management team have had now 3 chances at appointing a manager. They're probably going to get their 4th. And my personal view is that, and I've said this for some time, the club needs to reset. This is not just a moment to sack Jose Mourinho and appoint another manager. This is a moment for the club to take stock of what they're doing, to reset the structure in terms of recruitment, in terms of the football decision-making in the football club, and make sure that what they do next is the right move. And that's not about speed. That's not about going and rushing in the sort of, you know, first manager that's available. That's about making sure the next manager is the right manager. They'll have to pay for him, probably. If it's the one we think it's going to be. And the reality of that is that they're going to have to make sure they put the right football structure in around it. I don't know how, you know, they see it as a positive that they've got 65 scouts. I see it as confusion, particularly if you've not got what would be a definitive individual who, to be fair, has a level of sort of control. So they've got to reset the football structure within the club. They've got to put more intelligent people in there who understand the football side of things and not just hide behind the manager and Jose Mourinho. They have to look at themselves as well and make sure that there isn't just change at sort of managerial level, but at other level. And then going down to the players, you know, the players, to be fair, have seen this play out in the dressing room. It is never easy for players when you can see that there are problems above. But the players themselves will now come under pressure because they can no longer blame the manager. They've no longer got the guy to look up to that they can blame and say, oh, he's not getting the best out of us. He's negative tactics. That excuse is now gone. So they've got nowhere to hide now as well.
Those are the thoughts of Gary Neville, former Manchester United captain, giving his thoughts. A lot for us to unpick there. Let's start with a Man U fan, shall we? Let's start with Carlos van Rosenfeld. I was going to start this conversation by saying, did we see that one coming? I think we probably did see it coming. Did we see it coming this week?
To be honest, I didn't see it coming this week. I saw it coming, but I think it's they've postponed it for too long. But listening to what Gary was saying there, I fully agree with him. Yes, Jose Mourinho was not up to scratch. I don't know what happens behind closed doors. But if I was a Manchester United owner now, I think I'd clean out the board too, Tom. I think, you know, if you look at Ed Woodward and so forth, I think they need a bit of fresh blood in there. They've had three attempts now. They've appointed Moyes. He didn't work. They've appointed Van Gaal. It didn't work. They appointed Jose Mourinho. It hadn't worked. So I think somewhere along the line, the manager can take so much blame, but we need to look at to the management of the club. And I think, you know, where I do agree with Gary, I think now is the time for a fresh start. They're going to have to look who sits on the board. I believe they need, from that perspective, they need a new management perspective. I think also what I feel lacked at Man United this season, that in previous successful Man United teams, they always identified one person who was going to be the captain. For example, back in the good days, it was always Roy Keane. He kind of set the rules of the dressing room and everybody went by that. And speaking about Roy Keane in an interview earlier, I tend to agree with him. I think these players have got too much power. You know, every time something doesn't go their way, they start grumbling and they don't want to play. A lot of players in that squad, to me, aren't good enough to compete with the Cities and the Liverpools and the Chelseas of this world. And also, some of them aren't even in good enough shape. So I think there's a certain way that maybe they need to structure the pay differently of players to get better performances out of them. But I think there's more facets to the problem that Man United are having than just Jose Mourinho.
There was a question in there about, you know, is it the board's fault? Is it the club's fault? Is it the players' fault? Everyone looks to apportion blame at the moment. There is an American, a large American element to this equation as well. Club is owned and run by an American company as well. Have they missed a trick not bringing in a director of football, a director of sport to oversee things?
You mentioned that family, the Glazers, and they also own the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And one common theme about the teams that they have owned, they just cycle through these coaches. They go through coaches like it's no one else. They got rid of Tony Dungy. They got rid of John Gruden. They got rid of Raheem Mertz, Greg Schiano, Lovie Smith. In South Florida, it's just on the west coast of Florida, they just bring in head coach and head coach. If they're not going to get done, they get rid of them. And you're starting to see that with Manchester United with the current management right now. They've had they're getting their fourth chance now on a new manager for United. They've proven, the Glazer plant family has proven this by the two teams that they own. They're going to sack the coach. They're going to go for the coach. They're not going to go for the management. So if that's the route that they're going to take, then they need to start picking some better coaches for these franchises. You have to think at one point you're going to have to start looking at some of these directors of player personnel on the football side of things, the American football side of things, and the Manchester United side of things. I mean, they've just made wrong decision after wrong decision. You heard in the interview there, they didn't get Jose's players that he wanted before the World Cup this year. He put in some requests. They didn't get those players. Once you don't get those players, you lose your confidence as a manager. You're always looking over your shoulder. It seemed like every single week, every single Saturday, was Jose going to get sacked? That was the whole entire storyline this season. No manager, whether it's Jose Mourinho or a first-year manager, wants that over their shoulder when they're looking after the biggest football club in the world. So they have a lot of problems going on up there in Manchester right now, it seems, with the biggest football club in the world.
Fascinating story, and one that's been observed the world over. Time now to take a global perspective. I promise you some names from years gone by joining us here on The Grill today as we celebrate our final show of the year. Look forward to a new season in 2019 live from Barasti. And it's an absolute pleasure to welcome back one of the original grillers. Zulf Hayat Khan is back here in the UAE. Zulf, good to have you on board.
Hi, Tom. Nice to be here.
So
hi, guys.
Before we get on to Manchester United, where are you now? What are you doing?
I'm in Slovakia. I'm doing a couple of things. I have my own TV show. I'm sure I'll bore you about that a little bit later. And my own trade business. So things are moving glacially, but we're getting there.
But you still obviously retain your unnatural sort of passion for all things sport, I'm taking it. So how's this story been read by you, but also over in mainland Europe?
Well, you'd be surprised. As the Premier League is as popular here as it is everywhere else in Europe. Colm Inčes, you want to announce the goal?
Just going to wait for Benji to give us one of them. First goal of the afternoon. It goes to the home team as well. 13 minutes on the clock. They've been threatening ever since the start of this game. And Aubameyang is the first man to etch his name into that scorecard. Arsenal have been very impressive in the early stages of this game. And you look, Arsenal, under the captaincy of Mesut Ozil. Six changes from Unai Emery. And Aubameyang picking up the ball. Far side of the box. Comes back across from him and just toe-pokes it into the far right corner. 1-0 to Arsenal.
Not too sure if Unai Emery is going to be happy with that celebration. A full forward somersault there, Tom, from the man himself. And as you say, I reckon that could be an easy bit of ankle damage. So anyway, enjoy the celebration. Great goal.
1-0 Arsenal. Back to Zulfiqar Khan on all things Man U.
Yes, so as I was saying, the Premier League is as big in Central Europe as it is anywhere else in the world. And obviously they've got some cracking players, Slovak players at Inter Milan and Marek Hamšík at Napoli. So the big leagues are followed with keen interest. And of course, they have the rights for all the games. So everybody's watching them. And the Kolarovićs are there. Jose Mourinho is a household name. And just to echo what the guy said there, he didn't look happy. And he hasn't looked happy since his last season at Chelsea. And I don't know if it's not, he spent $500 million, so he should have a certain amount of quality there in his squad. I think the difference between him and Pep, and obviously people make the distinction across the city, is that Pep's taken a real interest in the academy and developing the youth. And I don't think Sir Alex had left him, as all the managers before him, a rich enough youth that he could integrate into that first team.
So what I just want to throw in to all three of you to get thoughts on this one as well, and you make a great sort of analogy there between the two Manchester managers. One man who seems to have really taken to life up north, up in Manchester, has moved his family there, has bought a house there, has put roots down there at the moment. He's really imbibed into what's going on there. And then Jose Mourinho, who spent $500,000 in a hotel room. He's spent over 400 days in a hotel room. He's never moved into a flat. He's never moved into his house. His family have never been around. That just struck me as toxic from the very start.
It's as if he had one foot out the door before he even started. I don't know if you follow Pep's little ditties on the BBC Sports specifically. He's a big fan of Oasis, and obviously he's going to get that side of the city right, you know, bang on his side. And you look at people talk about Phil Foden all day, and he doesn't get perhaps as many games as he should. But look at the development. He's made Raheem Sterling world class. And when Raheem Sterling left Liverpool, you know, he wasn't great in possession, wasn't great holding the ball up. Now he's a link player. I think he's second for assists in the Premier League. So that's an extraordinary thing. And also, Jose was blessed with riches. Martial, Rashford, Lingard, Lukaku were all great, great players. And for some reason, they're performing substandard. And again, you know, we can argue all day. It's the manager's tactics. Jose's always favoured a negative brand of football, and that doesn't link into the Manchester United psyche. Manchester United, as far back as I can remember, much as I loathe them, have always played a wonderful brand of football, and that is not there anymore. And the reset button that everybody's mentioned is something that needs to happen. They need to get that core, or that brand value back, I think, and they're not doing it for him.
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer will take over as manager today. We're told interim manager. He's been very vocal, though, saying he'd love the job if it came available. Obviously, he wouldn't take it. Is he the right man to guide them through the remainder of the season, CBR?
No, I don't believe he is. I think he comes in with too little experience here. He's a Manchester United legend. But in all honesty, I think, and coming back to my earlier point, there needs to be a shake-up there. I don't believe he's quite the guy who can bring that shake-up. I think now they need to start thinking long-term. I don't know if the guy is quite available, but if I can, for example, use an example, I think they need somebody like a Pochettino to bring in there, to Zulf's point, kind of get the youth going again, get the youngsters coming through, and kind of believe into a culture, number one, and a game plan that he wants to assert in the team. And I think until he can bring somebody in there that's gonna do that, I still believe the club will struggle. Because to Ross's point a little bit earlier, the Glazers are looking for a quick fix now. They're looking for a couple of quick points. Is Ole Gunnar going to do that? I don't believe he's going to.
I completely disagree. Look, Zidane was given the Real Madrid job with equally little experience, and he won them three Champions Leagues in a row. He'd been coaching Castilla.
But look at the players he had at his disposal. Cristiano Ronaldo, Gareth Bale.
Look at the players that Jose has as well. Lukaku, Rashford, Martial. He spent a lot of money on those guys.
Not world class.
I don't know. I think you could argue that, that there's enough quality in that squad to deliver. It's just what the message was coming across on the pitch clearly wasn't enough. I disagree on the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer thing as well. They want someone as an interim guy who has that ethos of the club. And he knew exactly what Sir Alex was talking about in terms of the game plan. I think maybe not a long-term solution, but if you look at the fixture list, there's for the next 10 games, Manchester United should win all of them. Yeah. The only game is the Tottenham away that's hard for them. The rest of them should be a shoo-in. If Jose had had those 10 games, he might have still have had a job.
Which is sort of leads me on to my next question. And again, I just watch on with interest. I sort of echo your point, Zulfi, about, you know, I'm not a Manchester United fan, but I am a fan of what Manchester United has done for English football and football per se in years gone by. And to see them not doing that and coming very short of doing that at the moment is not good for football, for the brand of football. To that point, though, of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and I put this one to you, Ross Christ, again, looking at his comments, and obviously he's elated to be there, and his club's got a big payoff because they're off-season, so he's been able to come on over as well. I just thought, and again, strike me down if I'm wrong on this one, I just thought he mentioned Sir Alex Ferguson too much in the build-up to this first game, and the fact that he was constantly on the phone to him, and the fact that he would be seeking some advice from him. We need to move on from Sir Alex Ferguson, and we have not moved on from Sir Alex Ferguson. So is there an element of the spectre that is Sir Alex Ferguson?
And he went out and in his first movie, he picked up Sir Alex Ferguson's top assistant manager to join him on his staff as well. So it's just like we're taking steps backwards to move forwards almost, it seems. But yeah, I think Manchester United fans and people that have been following the club want this team to perform the United way. And this guy has been in that dressing room. He understands what that type of football is. Because certainly under Jose Mourinho, Louis van Gaal, and David Moyes, they were not playing United way of football where they just keep attacking and scoring goals and coming at you down your throat. It just seemed like for these past couple seasons, it was score a goal, park the bus. Score a goal, park the bus. And Manchester United fans are looking at their television screens wanting to rip their hair out because for the last two decades, they've had Sir Alex Ferguson attacking that goal at all costs. This guy understands what that means. The assistant coach coming in understands what that means. And I'll tell you what, I bet when he goes out in that lineup and he comes out and he's going to tell these guys, listen, boys, we're changing everything that you've been doing with Jose Mourinho and we're going for that goal. We're going full accelerator for that goal. And keep in mind, this guy has the biggest tryout of his whole entire career. So, I mean, forget what he did at Manchester United. Forget what he did down in Cardiff. Forget what he did up in Scandinavia. This is his biggest job interview, and everyone, the whole entire world is going to be watching him. You're going to know he's going to put so much offensive firepower out there in that starting 11, and he's going to be playing for quite possibly could be his biggest payday as well.
It's interesting you mentioned there about that starting 11. I think all of us will be watching on with interest around about 8:30 to see who lines up for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's first game as interim manager for Manchester United. We know Romelu Lukaku will not be part of the team. He's back in Belgium on personal issues, which were apparently organised before Jose Mourinho was given the boot. But that again just sort of sparks yet more conspiracy theories about player power. There's been all sorts of chat about Pogba tweets and text messages throughout the week, certain problems and certain niches within that player's changing room at the training ground as well. More insight on that now. Roy Keane, who's never short of a few words or two, who always likes to call it as it is, he believes that player power is very much to blame for the demise of Jose Mourinho.
Do you think the players obviously get away with murder?
In what sense?
Just the way they hide behind the manager. Mourinho, whatever you say about players, they've thrown them under the bus. And people said Mourinho has been falling out with players. Well, you would fall out with players. That's the name of the game when players turn up overweight or players aren't training properly and not producing. And then for some of them to down tools, you know, shame on some of them players. I'm not Mourinho's biggest fan, don't get me wrong, but I can't tolerate footballers who just, as I said, hide behind their agents, their pals in the media. Bit of a joke, really. Just at United, trust me, the modern player, they're not just weak players, they're very weak human beings. You know, you can't say a word to them.
Player power? Players have too much power?
You certainly wouldn't want Roy Keane over for Christmas, would you? Quite honestly, he's not short of a few words, as you said, Tom. But yeah, after Bosman, I think players have had all the power. and that's now 30 years. I think maybe, Carl mentioned earlier, maybe the pay structure needs to change. Maybe it's performance-based. Maybe we have salary caps, and then you do it. I think similarly in certain American leagues, that's how it operates. So if the players have too much power and they hide behind their agents, and they're big sissies now, aren't they? They should get out there. They've got 90 minutes to prove what they're paid that money for to do it properly.
Is there an element, do you think, here where... I turn this one to you again, because I look at it from a sort of American point of view, where performances on the field are obviously all important, but equally important within that structure is the brand. And if I can bring in someone like a Paul Pogba, and he can sell me a million Man U shirts throughout the year, and I can encourage him to put an Instagram post and a tweet up every single day, does that inflate the value, or dare I say the ego, of the Pogman?
Yeah, it's something we're dealing with now in 2018 as we head into 2019 that we haven't had to deal with, I guess, 10 years back, with the power of these players have on the power of social media and their branding and everything like that. So, yeah, I have to agree with what Mr. Keane was saying as well. It just seems like that football nowadays, the power is all with the player. I can't think of any other sport really out there where if a player doesn't want to be on a team, he can just go in and make a transfer request and just be a...
Or just sit on the bench.
Just sit on the bench or just mope around until they sell his rights to another team. I mean, in cricket, in rugby, in American football, basketball, I mean, obviously no one controls you. You are your own man. You are your own woman. No one's going to force you to go out onto that pitch. But you sign the contract at the beginning of the day, and it seems like these contracts mean nothing in professional football, especially in the English Premier League. But in professional football as well, but the English Premier League strikes me as the number one league where if the player doesn't want to be part of this club anymore, he gets on the phone to his agent, they start working out some backdoor deals with some other clubs, and boom, he's out in the next month.
And the media jumps on board too. To me, it's pretty simple. You get employed by ARN to speak on the radio, not to send out tweets to sell ARN shirts. Same with Paul Pogba. He gets paid to produce on the field. He should not be involved with social media tweets and selling football jerseys, etc., etc. To me, at the end of the day, it's a company. He should not be exchanging any information that's happening within the company to anybody on the outside world, because you get paid for performances on the field, and if you're not producing, well, your pay should be affected by
that. That's an old mindset, though, that you have to
well,
mold.
So Alex Ferguson, how many titles did he win with that mindset?
That's great, but Sir Alex Ferguson, there was no Twitter when Sir Alex Ferguson was coaching.
10 years ago, interrupt, Ross, if you look at Cristiano Ronaldo's move to Juventus, he's made his money back. The club share, the car share company went up 8%. So he's made them like $480 million.
But he's producing on the field. Yeah,
but that's not irrelevant. So the two are linked.
Have Paul Pogba been producing on the field? I don't think so.
Well, he hasn't, but I'm sure that his tweets and his messages garner enough attention to sell shirts. It is a business. You mentioned the ARN analogy, and while there's truth in what you say, there's also an interlink that's you can't run away from in modern football.
What I'm trying to say is, don't forget what you're employed to do.
Because, absolutely.
Because I kind of feel Pogba is more interested in YouTube videos and selling shirts than what he is for scoring goals.
What Roy Keane said was right. Exactly. They behave a little bit like babies. And Mourinho, if there was ever a manager to stand up to those players, it was him. At the end of the day, if they're not performing on the pitch, he's lost his job as a result. Pogba's there. It might be that Solskjaer gets the best of him, and then Mourinho will feel hard done by. But it's fickle nature of football.
One thing you can guarantee, judging by the conversation we've been having for the last 29 minutes, that the Manchester United game away at Cardiff City, ironically, the club that was managed by a certain Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, not overly successfully, it must be said, in years gone by, is kicking off at 9:30 this evening. We'll have team news for you at 8:30, so a lot to look forward to there. Got to go to the news. Before we're going to go to the news, we're going to go to Jose. So I'm going to go around the table. We've spoken a lot about the players. We've spoken a lot about the Glazers, about the club, about Manchester United, about Ollie. Jose is now on gardening leave. Jose, I am assuming, will be back in football, possibly, sometime in the near future. In a word or two to each of you, what next for Jose Mourinho?
Well, Jose Mourinho said when he started the Premier League that at the age of 55, I'll be retired on the Algarve. And I think he turns 55 soon. So I think money he's got enough of. But I honestly believe we will see Jose Mourinho in the MLS. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if he doesn't get associated with David Beckham's Miami franchise. He's got the personality to go there. One or two big signings. I reckon maybe the MLS next four, Jose.
Actually, he's secretly, not secretly, he's quite openly coveted a national job. Yeah, that's the one thing that's missing from his CV. And I think there's much less stress, you know, 16 games a year as opposed to the hurly-burly of the Premier
League. Living out of hotel rooms.
But, you know, as he said in every press conference, I've won three and the rest of the 19 other managers have only won two combined. So he still rests on his history. I think it's time for him to transition into international management.
I think he's got a good call. Portuguese head coach?
Yeah, Portuguese national team, Fernando Santos steps down. He could be in there. I don't think a big club in England is going to take a gamble on a cranky Mourinho anymore. I honestly don't. If something opens up in one of these top five clubs, I don't think his name even gets brought in for an interview. I see something like this MLS or something completely out there and crazy. Like he's a head coach of Madagascar for a World Cup bid or something King like Julian. That. And he rides off into the sunset. What more does this man need?
And all. Well, one thing you can guarantee between now and then, he's going to be doorstepped a lot. He's already been doorstepped this week. It was Sky Sports who got the first words out of Jose.
Just wondering if you had any thoughts about the last 24 hours or so.
Gary, I think you know me, and I don't change. And what I did when I left Chelsea, for example, is the same that I'm going to do now. I keep the good things, and I don't speak about anything that happened in the club. We could speak about so many good things. We could speak about not as good, but that's not me. You know, it's finished. And Manchester United has a future, and without me, and I have a future without Manchester United. So why should I now be sharing with you or even with the supporters and if my feelings is over? That's me, and that's the way I have always been, and I was always very critic of managers that leave clubs and then they come out and they speak about details of what happened and who is to blame for and this kind of situation. That's not me. I just want to finish like it happened yesterday, and as I like to say, it's game over. And I just hope that you media respect this way of myself to react to this kind of situations. And until I get back to football, I think I have the right to live my normal life like I'm going to do now. I go for my little shopping, I go for my little walk. And that's what I want to do. And, you know, Manchester United is past.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.